Greetings. Welcome to William and I's little introduction to this episode of My Dinner with Andre.
I love how chill you are with your intro. It's like, I'm not going to like jazz it up and get you super excited right at the beginning. You know why you're here.
I'm very public radio. They know why they're here. We know why we're here. This is My Dinner with Andre. This is our attempt to sort of diversify the voices you hear on this network. It's not just William and I. And we have asked people we know and famous people we know and talented people we know to contribute, to watch the Louis Malle film, My Dinner with Andre, and have a discussion.
Yeah.
The film is a conversation, and we were wondering what it would look like if people had a conversation about that conversation.
It may be our most esoteric podcast, which is saying something with us, but you know what? I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. I think the topics is great. I think the topics brought up by My Dinner with Andre are interesting and far-reaching enough that people can basically use it to spin off into a conversation just about anything, really.
I just want
to hear other people talk, and giving some through line connects that podcast, and I like that.
And on this edition, we're going to be listening to Chelsea Spirito, a friend of mine. She's actually appeared in all of my radio dramas that are available on the Critically Acclaimed Network.
Remind people what those are.
I've written and made three by myself. One is called The Tenth Muse, which is about a time-traveling lesbian bar. In that one, Chelsea plays Willa, one of the co-owners of the bar. I also made one called Love at Nana, which is a conversation in a goth counterculture store, a real-life goth counterculture store that was really big in the early 1990s. And she was also in Determined, which is about a video cassette that could predict the future, and she plays the person on the video cassette. So she and I have known each other for a long time, and we've worked together. And
if you want to hear those...
You can hear those. You can either contact me via any of the... social media that I'm on. You can at Whitney Seibel on Twitter or even on Instagram. Just send me a private message and we can arrange something. I accept Venmo or PayPal and I can email an MP3 to you.
And if you're on our Patreon, patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, people who are at the top $20 a month tier get those at no extra cost.
That's right. Chelsea is a professional voice actress. She's been working in the format for a long, long time. And she and a friend of hers, Farah DeGrange, have started their own science fiction anthology audio drama series.
Awesome.
It's called From Beyond the Broadcast, and I'm in it. They've asked me to be sort of the Crypt Keeper character for that show.
What a great gig.
So I play Jam Handy, a filthy hobo who lives on hot dog water and sleeps in a car. Whose radio has been struck by lightning and now is getting broadcasts from other dimensions. This was the brainchild of Chelsea and Farah, and they've written a couple episodes so far. You can subscribe to it. And because I know them now, I've asked them and they very kindly responded by actually recording a conversation that they have had about My Dinner with Andre. They talk about... the classism of My Dinner with Andre, which is sort of a common theme throughout the show that the two characters don't really address, how one is really privileged and one is less privileged, but they're both kind of privileged New Yorkers. They talk about being a New Yorker. Farah is from New York. She lives in New York now.
Chelsea, great.
Chelsea lives here in LA, so they had this sort of cross-country conversation.
That's a great perspective to add, yeah.
And they also think about the poor suffering wives of the two main characters who are mentioned but don't appear in the movie.
That's a great point. I don't know if other people have really brought that subject up, but you're right. That's kind of
But yeah, listen to this episode. Enjoy, and by all means, subscribe to From Beyond the Broadcast.
Yeah, please check them out.
Weird science fiction anthology series brought to you by pretty much exclusively queer creators. So that's a really important aspect.
Yeah, seriously, like whether you know, I want you to listen to the rest of this episode, but you might want to just pause it right now. Wherever you're podcasting, you know, search for From Beyond the Broadcast. If you love Whitney, you'll get Whitney in every episode. But either way, let's support this really, really cool show. So be sure to subscribe, leave a review if you can. That is very especially helpful, especially for newer podcasts to help them find an audience. And be sure to follow them wherever they are. And now let's listen to their dinner with My Dinner with Andre.
Oh man. Okay. So I think the best way to start it is so you watched the movie yesterday, right?
On Friday.
On Friday.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I give it 3 out of 5 leaving my family for an extended vacation to find myself.
3 out of 5. So you are going to go on this vacation to
find yourself. Yeah, I'm giving it 3 leaving your family to find yourself, because really what you are is depressed, out of 5.
Wow. So would you say that it was a movie that that touched you in that way, that made you want to be like, I have to go now?
No, the opposite. The reason I'm giving it this score is because I'm thinking about it in different ways, not only just analyzing it as a film as it is now, but like at the time that it came out, I can see how impactful this would have been, especially,
absolutely,
you know, what they're talking about, what was happening at the time, what was happening in society, and what was happening as film or as, you know, plays, mm-hmm, and blah, blah, blah. I think I'm trying to look at it from that lens. And yeah. I do see the impact this may have had on people.
You know? Yeah, 1981, it was still, what was it? That's why it's in our popular zeitgeist, you know?
Right.
Did you ever watch Community?
Not all the way through.
There's an episode called My Dinner with Abed, where
for his
birthday wants to have a My Dinner with Andre situation.
Yeah.
And I think, because it's so different than anything, even now, like I mm-hmm, can't think of any other movie that's just an hour and a half, 2 hours of two people sitting and having a conversation.
Right.
Otherwise it's, you know, some indie film that is clearly not on my radar. Sorry,
right,
for
right,
those people that are listening and are like, there's like 8 that I can name off the top of my head.
I'm sorry. Have you seen, you know, that reaction basically.
Exactly. But yeah, it was, I think I went back and forth the whole time I watched it. I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Damn.
And I was like, Andre's kind of a pretentious piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, really rooting for Wallace, even though there was nobody really to root for. God bless Wallace for coming in every blue moon, especially at the end where he's just like, why can't we just enjoy life? Why does it have to be anything more? And I was like,
right,
yes.
Right. I went through so much watching this. And that's another reason why I gave it a 3, is because I was like, personally, like, there were moments where I was like, oh yes, what you're saying is true. Yes, you're on it. Then they would say, the same character would say something. I'm like, no, are you fucking kidding me? We were together with this, and where are you going? Like, and you know, and that I liked it because it's like, yeah, humans, we fluctuate in our feelings. Not everything is, mm-hmm, black and white. It's, we're all a little bit gray. So I appreciated that. I will tell you who I'm rooting for, and that is the judging waiter. I'm rooting for him morning, noon, and night.
I took notes and I'm trying to find where mine was. So I was like, it literally just says, this waiter really doesn't like Wallace. And I love that they never address it. Like, not once. He's just like giving him the side eye to the very fucking end.
You know, he's like, you uncultured swine.
There was that part of me, because this is such a higher brow film, considered such a higher brow film, that
right,
there was a little part of me after the movie that was like, is that symbolic of something?
Right.
What is the angry, upset waiter mean in the grand scheme of things?
Like, oh, girl, I've got notes.
Also, speaking of looks, I love Wallace's thoughtful, like, nodding faces in the first, like, hour. He's just like, uh-huh.
Gold.
Yes. Oh, just something about that. It's not supposed to be funny. And every time it zoomed in on just him listening, I was like, oh. Oh yes,
he is an actor. Honestly, there was one of the moments where he does a reaction shot and he's got food in his mouth, and I was like, this is too much. It was so funny. It was so good.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it was just like, just funny to like sit there and kind of anticipate what reaction shot I'm gonna get from him next.
Yes. And what I noticed was, and this might be being overly like deep, like nuanced or like picking it apart, we always saw Wallace's reacting faces head on. And I don't think we ever fully saw Andre's reacting face is full. If he was reacting, we were seeing him in the reflection of the mirror.
Yes.
Or Wallace was still in the frame.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting, given that the movie itself was, you know, My Dinner with Andre. Mm-hmm. But the perspective we always had was Wallace's perspective at all times. I just thought that was cool.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember there was a specific moment where Wallace is kind of giving his monologue, and I could not stop staring at Andre in the mirror. I was just like watching him, like, bated breath, like, oh, what's he going to say? What's his face going to do now?
I want to feel something. Andre, you know what? Andre has got to have the most tolerant, patient,
oh my God, I know you're
kind
say.
Wife on the fucking planet. Poor Conchita. Like, I wanted her to show up at the end, like, or just some, just something. That poor, suffering woman. And you know that. I was gonna say, Andre's talking about her like she's so understanding, and this, you know, she fucking isn't. She's like at home on the verge of divorce with this man, and Andre's like completely oblivious. He's just like, yeah, she understands. I need to go to Poland and, you know, dance around naked in a forest with Polish people. No, 1981, absolutely not. She is either A, fucking somebody else, or B is like borderline one foot out the door.
But, honestly, I had many, many theories about Conchita. And side note, Andre is, of course, the type of man to have a wife named Conchita. I'm not even going to get into the layers on that. Just
skinny,
think about it.
Theater, Woody Allen-esque man in 1981. Right. Of course he has a Conchita.
And he's a little bit too theater and artiste to have the quintessential, what at the time would have been like, you marry your blonde homemaker wife.
Right.
But he's like, oh no, I'm gonna get me a Conchita. It's like a little bit of spice to add to him being like this figure.
Exactly.
He
was going to theater openings. He's like, I need a little bit of color on my arm. Andre. I don't not want to, like, I was really torn about how I felt about Andre, you know, for that. And I hate to be so blunt about it. But it's like two older white guys, not older, they're like 30s and 40s. And it seems like white dudes pontificating on certain aspects of life. It's so, this dream world and fantasy and experience, it's so easy for these particular people to have these experiences and then, you know, expound on the nuances of life and, oh, we're failing as a society. And you know, we're being sucked in by the heated blanket. And it's like, how fucking dare you? Like, I understand it. And there are aspects of it that are beautiful and so enlightening. And you start to get sucked in by him almost.
Right.
And I think that's such a larger metaphor for this type of rhetoric and thought. But when you really break it down, it not everybody can have this. Not everybody's allowed or has access to that type of thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree. That's why I fluctuated so much with my opinions on their opinions throughout the film, because like they were saying some things that were important to say, but then I also was just looking at them through the lens of like, you live such a privileged life and you don't even understand it. And I really, really feel like I want to take a clip of that, the electric blanket moment.
Yeah.
Because dare I say that whole section felt like the perfect example for me to share with people about what white privilege is.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, well, you're comfortable under your warm blanket and good for you and things are going well, but you're not seeing how everyone else around you is possibly cold as fuck and suffering and maybe can't afford that blanket and maybe can't afford to have the luxury that you have, that you feel like, well, I have this and I don't want to give it up. And he's so scared. He's like, but I don't want to be cold. It's like,
you could also see it in the opposite way though, too, where Andre's like, well, I have all the money for the heated blanket. Like, that's great. Except I want to have the true experience, you know, like the working man's experience.
Oh, yeah,
and it's like, okay, we're glorifying this nuanced experience of like, I want to be cold. I want to know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, some people don't have the luxury to go back and forth to say, right. I want to be, you know, warm and, oh, I'm going to have this. He almost fetishizes that mm-hmm. experience where it's like, there are people out there that would love to just have the one comfort of like a roof over their head
right.
or a heated blanket. I think you could definitely see it in both ways, just depending on which person you focus on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's like the whole film is like, they both have valid points, but they're both coming from a place of privilege that, you know, I appreciate them kind of trying to think outside of what their world is. And that's one of the reasons why I had issues with Wallace as well. It was like, you know, he's like, I just want this little world, and like, I just want to have something to do every day, and I just want to have my little tasks. And I'm just like, you know, I kind of agreed with Andre was saying, sometimes you need to stop and just look around you and think about something else and think about life a little bit differently. But in the end, not to be a scholar, but in the end, all they're talking about what they're really talking about is that capitalism is bullshit and it's ruining our lives from the inside out. This is what this is about. If you really want to.
Two sides of the same coin.
Right. 100%.
Because I was going to say, not to play devil's advocate, but like, yeah, you're right. And Andre has those points where you have to break out of the mold sometimes in order to live that life. But I also get Wallace's perspective where he's like, look, I make almost no money. I'm just trying mm-hmm. to survive. Like, if I take joy in the little things, like, how dare you? He doesn't mm-hmm. say how dare you, but like, how dare you, you know, impose upon me that I am not living my life to the fullest, you
right.
know?
Right.
And it, you see both.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
total left turn. Because I have this in my note and I have no real segue to do it. Did you mark the line about nursing the teddy bear in that?
Did I fucking mark it? I paused the movie.
He's talking about, what was it? The beehive. And at first I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of a fun idea. And I like marked it. And I was like, I sort of like that. That's very 1970s, 1980s, like flash mob. And then he's like, and they had a teddy bear and he nursed it. And then I nursed it. I was like, hold up. I was like super here for this scene until he said nursed a teddy bear. And I like stopped and I was like, oh, and I couldn't think of anything else for like the next 2 or 3 minutes of the movie. I was like, I literally like grabbed my chest. I was like, ew.
Yeah. I wonder why that was his first choice to go to. And you know, like stuff like this, I like to think that this type of theater exposition doesn't shock me because I work for a cultural institution in Brooklyn that is very like, we're going to throw ourselves in some sand and roll off the stage. And like, you know, we do a lot of crazy shit. So I've seen stuff like this. So there's a part of me I was like, oh, this is interesting. But I was like, why are we suckling the teddy bear? What does this mean? What are you looking for, Andre? Do you want to be, you want to suckle? Like, is this a mom
thing?
Both
of them too. Both of them. Like one dude did it. And the other dude was like, yes, yes. Perfect thing to do with the teddy bear.
Yeah. 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 I literally just wrote teddy bear lactation. Wow.
I'm sure it's just like a throwaway thing, but every part of me is like, you know, he doesn't bring up his parents at all. Maybe he's got mommy issues. Like you said, mm-hmm. like, maybe in the throes and heights of this passionate beehive experience, like his true self started to come out. He's like, I just want a family and a teddy bear mommy or baby. And just like a true self emerged for a moment.
But it's hilarious because he has a family that he doesn't, I mean, he engages with right? them, but he's, you know, the first half of the film, I wanted to destroy Andre. He was driving me insane because all I saw was a man who was obviously depressed and obviously hates himself, running away from life and mm-hmm. trying to find fulfillment in these great excursions. There's nothing wrong with doing that, but it just rubbed me the wrong way because he has a family at home. And if you want to know what, like, I feel like such a hippie, but like, if you really want to know what life is about, how about being there for your fucking kids so they can have a chance at having a good life instead of being messed up possibly because their dad's always running around the Kathmandu to find himself, you know?
Yeah.
So that was very frustrating for me to watch and listen to, because he's just a very privileged man who is upset with life. And I feel like sometimes a lot of people, when there is not a lot, there are things wrong in their lives, obviously, but when they don't have immediate danger or worry or am I going to survive to think about on a day in and day out basis, mm-hmm. they do kind of wild things to kind of cope with that, to kind of, you know,
yeah.
fill that, you know, that need.
Boy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it, it just really upset me. And I was like, Wallace, and I was looking at him with a piece of lettuce out of my mouth. Like, bitch, what the fuck are you talking about right now? Do your children know who you are?
He doesn't even talk about, like, he brings up Conchita a couple times, but he never right. brings up his kid. Like, that, that was also some, oh, doesn't he?
He does. He brings them up, like, a couple, like, sprinkles them in a few times. He's particularly spoke about them when he brought the monk home.
Oh, that's right. But they're never in the individual, though. It's always like, how did my family react to what I am doing, what I am bringing in? I am enriching them. Like, they're reacting to me doing yeah. a thing.
Yeah,
it's never any individual.
He sprinkles it in a little bit. Like, I think there's something about the daughter and her back and like something like that. But it's never like a main point of conversation for him. It's always okay. to kind of pad whatever he's talking about. But yeah, it's like that freaking monk is more of a father figure, even though he doesn't really even want to deal with their kids. He's more a father figure to your children than you are. And he says that. He says there's something that was lacking in the home. And I'm like, so yeah. you know it's lacking. You know that is lacking in your home. So you're so wrapped up in your own despair that you're not able to be there for your family as you probably should. And that
you know what the solution is, you know, the solution mm-hmm. is to any, you know, home that is lacking, it's bringing a Tibetan monk home.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 100%. After you guys eat sand, cause you have nothing to fucking do.
Oh my God. All of his friends, he speaks on his friends in these passing, you know, their set dressing to the rest of the anecdote, which sidebar, man, that guy is full of anecdotes, just chock full of anecdotes. But all of his friends, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
So all of his friends, kind of assholes. That All Souls Day part where like we all got together on All Souls Day.
Yeah.
And we all are doing spooky stuff. And like four or five of our friends went off and ended up making us bury ourselves in a grave. Fuck your friends.
Exactly. This just is connected to the idea that he doesn't have anything that is in his life that puts him in imminent danger or survival yeah. mode. That it's like you have to be buried alive to trigger that reaction of
something.
Hustle or, you know, yeah. Whereas like Wallace is like, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to make my plays. The fact that Wallace, I was dying when he said that his side hustle was being an actor. And I was like,
yes!
That is the bleakest thing that you have to be an actor because you're not working as a playwright. That just shows you how hard life as a playwright is.
I did the loudest cackle listening to that. Because I was like, you know, like putting stuff away in the first like 10 minutes. So like mm-hmm. I wasn't super, super focused. But mm-hmm. yeah, I heard that and I was like, meh, in my apartment because no. And also that shows you 1981, like, okay, yeah, he's got a spot in the chorus or like, you know, yeah. something on some play. Fuck you, Wallace.
Wallace. You know, in the beginning I was with Wallace. I was triggered by his experience seeing him walk down the streets mm-hmm. of New York. I was like, oh, this is me walking in New York, being frustrated. And then seeing him like enjoy the gross subway breeze, I was like, yep, I know that feeling.
Yep.
And just the yep. look of mild despair on his face, I was like, yep, sounds about right. And then he lost me at, he just wishes he can go home and have Debbie cook him dinner. Debbie is the only one fucking working in this house.
Debbie is a waitress 3 nights a week. Like, this poor woman. I assume this poor woman. I mean, look at Wallace. he's perfectly average. He's a very mediocre average white man. He's everything I would have expected.
I was just so frustrated. I'm like, listen, how about you go home and cook Debbie dinner? I'm sorry. I'm glad I think she's relieved that you're fucking going out She's gonna have to cook you dinner when she gets home. She's tired.
She's gonna eat on a break and then go to bed when she gets home. Yeah. Like, leave Debbie alone.
Leave Debbie the hell alone. And he's like, yeah, someone has to make some money in this house. I'm like, okay.
Poor suffering women. Just both wives I have the utmost sympathy for. It's so interesting, like, taking that step back, though, and seeing those two perspectives, like, just kind of bare bones. Wallace, I related to the most. I think I even, like, I wrote something in my notes, something like, Andre is that friend we all have, like, relating to Wallace more, the friend that's more successful or seemingly more successful. And
right.
Wallace is just trying to survive. And Andre is... on the outside, someone who's big and successful, you know, Wallace talks about how he's been able to support his family while he's been abroad. But really, for all of this beautiful, you know, pontification on life and the aspects of it, like, Andre seems like a hollow, searching man.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I take from that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Towards the end, and to bank off of the hollowness of Andre, the line that hit me, like he got, I don't know, Andre never fully redeemed himself. It was like, he was kind of irritating a little bit in the beginning. And then you agree with certain aspects of what he says. And there are very relevant themes even today. But when he said out loud that he was learning to be a human being, I'm pretty sure Andre might be a sociopath. He's like trying to figure out how to feel and emote. And I'm like, this man is going to go out and murder somebody after this dinner.
Oh, no.
Learn to be a human being.
He's going to cry through the whole murder, too, because this seems to be his MO. I'm so conflicted about Andre, because actually when I was watching it, I was like, yeah, I could see how Chelsea would relate to Wallace more, because I think you have more of that pragmatic mind and, like, these are my tasks. I get my shit done. Like, I'm on it. I'm hustling. You're a hustler. And here's, I'm more like the hoity-toity flighty. Like, I just want to live in the moment. I just want to express love and, like, art. And I'm like, you know, but I was also two minds about it. Honestly, at one point I was like watching it and I was like, is this just my two minds arguing with each other? Is this what this film is? It's like me being like, I want to go live in a commune and make art. And in my other side being like, if you don't pay for rent and put some food in the refrigerator, you're going to die, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do think there are times where I was frustrated with him and was like, what are you talking about? Just live your life and, like, take care of your family and work. But there were moments where he was like, life can't just be about working and ticking the box and just, you know, not realizing what's going on around us. And I related to that. I was like, yes, I agree. And I think as a people in society, especially Western society, we're always told, like, you have to be the best and you have to get this mile marker at this age and you have to get this job and you have to marry this person and you have to, like, constantly be fighting to get this wonderful life. And it's exhausting. Yeah. And I think a lot of people get so hyper-focused in it that they don't stop and just enjoy the life around them. I'm not saying leave your family and go roll yourself in the desert,
but, you know, sand.
Yeah, you know, I take a little bit from both of them, and they both have their moments where they're a little bit more, what they're saying is a little bit more that I connect to what they're saying a little bit more. So
I agree. And I think the way you phrased it is, like, you know, two halves of a whole, you know, two sides of one brain is really spot on. And I feel the same way. There's somewhere in the middle where it's like, I want to be the Wallace so I can be the Andre. You're plugging away at work day in and day out, hoping for some kind of change or result so that you have the ability to fucking leave it all behind. Like, okay, when will I have enough money that I can go off and do something spur of the moment? Like, when will I have enough, you know, flexibility or power when it comes to work that I can, you know, decide to, you know, do something creative, like the workshop he held. It's such a difficult middle to hold in between those two things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you constantly feel pulled on either side.
100%.
I thought it was really interesting and semi poor segue what he's talking about how theater makes us feel. That was also like modern theater and the perception of reality and how you have to actually take an audience to the Sahara Desert for them to react. And I thought that what he was talking about was very relevant for what we're dealing with right now, like in popular culture and politics and in society, where he's like, well, you can't affect change. And that broke my heart to basically hear Andre talk about that, because it really did feel, when you feel helpless in this particular political climate where, you know, the protests that happened during the pandemic and feeling like, what else can I do to affect change? Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm mush mouthing it right now.
No, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. That feels so relevant today, where you try to inspire the masses or you try to be a part of a movement, and it's when, I'm trying to find the words, and this is all going into a podcast. I'm like, I didn't write notes about that part.
Are you trying to say almost that, like, everything's so bleak with the political climate that you almost feel like you can't reach the people, as like you were saying, that people are unreachable at this point?
Yeah, kind of. And that to make people feel something in order to enact that change, mm-hmm, feels impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
And I don't mean that in a negative way. I relate to that feeling, and every part of me wanted to say, to, you know, in react to that, I wanted to disagree. I wanted to say, no, you know, mm-hmm, look at the change that we're creating right now and the movements that are being formed and our greater acceptance and skills in having a conversation and a dialogue around shitty aspects of our society. Mm-hmm. And yet I was still kind of taken in by the sentiment that, like, it does, you feel despondent sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I was also torn with that, because I agree. There are times where it's exhausting to try to elicit a response from people sometimes, because, mm-hmm, people are just so comfortable in what they know, what they have felt, you know, safe, what the world that they feel safe in, that it's, mm-hmm, hard to kind of get them to look at things a little bit differently. But surprisingly, on this one, I was on Wallace's side, where he was like, I don't think that's impossible. I think there's ways, and like he was saying, yeah, specifically in the theater, to kind of get that emotion from people, get a reaction from people. I think what it is, I think they're looking at the world, and this is just their different point of views, obviously, that they're looking at the world differently. I think Andre is looking, yeah, at it on a bigger scope. He's like, everything is trash. Everyone's running around naked and screaming and killing each other, and it's trash, and they're all gonna die, and fuck them. And Andre's more like, he's so into his small world of just trying to make it day by day that he's able to kind of look at it in smaller pieces and, like, you know, this, yeah, is my world. This block that I live on is what I get through, and these are the people that I interact with, and maybe I can put on something that will elicit a response from them. And I think it's true. If you tell small stories and you can just affect 3 out of 1,000 people, that's important. So, yeah, you know, Andre sees it as a loss because all those other people haven't moved forward and haven't changed. But I see it as a positive that those 3 people, I've managed to let them see or have helped them experience something different. So I was also, you know, conflicted with that, but that's where I kind of stood on it at the end.
But I was going to say, I was like, I like the way that you expounded upon that on Wallace's perspective too. And he gets so passionate about that. And that you, mm-hmm, see that's kind of the moment where he starts to speak up, because it finally resonates and hits a nerve enough. He's like, I, yeah, don't agree with all of this. I'm kind of, yeah, done just being passive and taking this, right, and listening to it, because there is another side to what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And I, you know, it's funny, in the beginning, the early part, I thought Wallace was gonna, cause he made that whole reference about being the detective and liking to just ask the questions and see where it lays on the other person's end. And then, yeah, eventually he gets so fired up that he has to, like, come in and step in. I was like, okay, Wallace, you see, you know, I mean, there, and the funny thing is, in that moment, Andre is doing exactly what he's saying is impossible. He's eliciting a response and getting Andre, yeah, to think, getting Wallace to think about things differently. So it's like, he's proving himself wrong.
in telling this story. Yeah.
In telling this story. Yeah. So, you know, it was interesting to see it all unfold and kind of where they were going with that. Yeah. So yeah, in the beginning, when Wallace was a little bit more lean, like staying back and kind of reserved. I just enjoyed him, but I was like, is this man gonna do anything? What is he just gonna let Andre go on and be this pompous asshole and not step in? And you know,
I would almost want to rewatch it again, maybe not immediately, but
right,
you know, especially after talking about it and taking it in and really hitting on some of the different things we noticed. Like, I would want to go back in and watch it with a new, more focused lens and pick up those additional nuances to what Andre is saying, and then eventually what Wallace comes back with. I think it is, mm-hmm. it's more interesting after getting to pick it apart a little bit like that.
Yeah.
You and I watched it alone, right? I did.
Yeah, I watched it alone, and then my roommate came in for the last few minutes and she was like, what the hell is going on?
I was like, what are you watching?
I'm watching an influential theater, please.
You got really pretentious and you're like, you wouldn't understand.
Like, you would understand. You don't understand the struggles of life. Okay. Or maybe you don't know. Can I just say, one of my favorite moments of this film is such a small moment, yet it's told
the waiter.
Me.
It's the waiter.
I do love the waiter. Actually, there is a moment where when Wallace orders the potato soup, and the waiter is just, he just has this blinking tick, and I was like, is this Morse code? Is he trying to tell him not to order the soup, or like, is he, what's happening? The waiter was so important in my mind. I really wanted him to be like, I don't know. And there was a moment where I think Andre was going in on, you know, it was when he kind of shifted and was talking about how society is bullshit and how people are living in these fantasy worlds. And then the waiter just appears and he's like, is everything okay? And I'm like, I figured this movie out. This is the Matrix. This is the Matrix. Andre has figured out the Matrix and the waiter is here to stop him. I know this is where it's going.
I want someone to, maybe I'll have to Google it. Like, what is the significance of the waiter in My Dinner with Andre? You know, the Freudian, I think it's Freud. Somebody, if it's not, somebody will correct me. That sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Maybe that's what the waiter was.
He probably is.
Because you have to have a waiter in a out, you know, dinner situation. But there's that little part of my brain that's like, what does this mean? Is this a layman? Is he a third perspective that we are not hearing?
We're being Andres. So we are in fact being Andres in this moment. We're like, what is the meaning of the waiter? What does he stand for? Does he stand?
He's got the cigarette at the end. He just wants to go home.
Wants to go home.
Like, you assholes have been talking the whole time. This man just enjoying the simple things in life. Get the fuck out of the restaurant.
Seriously, let this man go home. So I segued into this whole waiter thing because it's gonna be like the conspiracy theory of our whole and like discussion of this film. I wanted to say there was a moment in the beginning when I first sit down that told me everything I needed to know about Andre and told me everything I needed to know about myself. It was and I don't even know if this was scripted. I don't even know if he just did it in the moment. But they sat down at the table and they're getting their menus, and then he gives the flowers to the waiter and he's like, we don't need this. Now, this is nothing. But my little brain, who is a person that's always like, you know, oh, you have to like, if the flower is here, you leave the flower here, you work around it. You know, this is how the restaurant's set up. He has this is me stretching it, but I feel like it's such a privileged, wealthy person's mind to walk into a space that is not yours. And it's not necessarily a negative, but to just be like, please remove this flower. We don't need this. Get this away.
It seems negative because it's such a superfluous thing. Like,
who
cares so much about the decor of your table that you would go, oh, I don't need these decorations. I don't need this candle. I don't need these flowers. Like, it sets the stage right off the bat.
It's audacity of the character that he's just like, oh, remove these flowers. And I'm just like, I've never even thought to do that. If there's something annoying me on the table, I will find a little corner and leave it there and like work around it, which is, you know.
But the only time you have to do that, like 99% of the time, is like if there's too much food on the table and you're like, oh, I don't have room. I don't have room here for this. Right. It's not like, fuck these flowers. I don't like them. I care to not have them on this table. I care not.
Flowers. This is a romantic dinner. How dare you?
I didn't even notice that. Like I saw it, I remember it happening.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't even click to me, not knowing who these two characters were at their
right,
core.
Right.
But now looking back, holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And it just tells me everything about, I need to know about him and everything I need to know about myself that I wouldn't even question to move the flowers. I'd just be like,
that
yes, sir,
make you
please.
Feel good.
Like, I'd be like, more flowers, sir. Please bring all the flowers to this table. I will carry the burden of the flower holding. Like, you know,
were they fresh flowers? Do you remember?
I'm
or were
not
they like
sure.
plastic?
I'm
because
not
that
sure.
could have been the definitive aspect. He's like, I don't fuck with plastic flowers.
You know why? Because like us, plastic flowers are living a life of a lie.
In stagnation, they do not change. They do not age. They're forever joyous in their, you know, solidity. Let me pontificate upon these fake florals once more.
Slow down, Andre. Slow down.
That's really good. I didn't even notice that. And you're totally right, though. That one gesture is like, okay, I know who you are. Mm-hmm. I think that's such a like you said, like it could have been off the cuff, but it could have been in the writing. Like, what a great nuance to add to that character
moment,
to give them. That's great.
Yeah. And I think even for Wallace, there's like a telling of the balance in their relationship where it's, you know, mm-hmm. Andre's like, I'm going to have the quail and he knows all the names of these things. And Wallace is just like, well, I'll have what he's having. And then,
yeah.
And then
it's so small.
Yeah, when the quail comes, he's like, oh, they're so small. I'm like, sir, do you not know what quail is?
And then even at the end where Wallace goes to help pay for the check and Andre goes, no, and he pays for all of it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. From start to finish, Andre has this dominance and these characteristics, these character traits that absolutely paint him without him saying a word.
100%. 100%. Like, he is the alpha here. Mm-hmm. Like, he might as well have swept the flowers off the table with his dick. Like, let's be real. It would have had the same effect, at least for me.
I'm dead. We could just end the conversation there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's like a lot going on in this film.
Oh my
for such
God.
A film that has technically not a lot happening. There's a lot happening, which is great. I enjoyed that.
And I think it's also an interesting change of pace because we so frequently watch movies that are to me, a lot of them are very physicality driven.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and I don't mean like taking action movies. I'm not saying like every single film is like, oh, we're just watching the bodily, you know, autonomy of each person doing blah, blah, blah. But like, it's such a change of pace to see Kevin Smith. Yeah. I'm not comparing the two movies, but like, you know, Kevin Smith is very dialogue heavy, very dialogue driven, very, mm-hmm. very, you know, talky. Same with Aaron Sorkin. And this definitely feels akin to that type of, that kind of weight, that kind of balance in a film where it's all very, very talky, very, very dialogue.
Yeah.
For anybody who's deigning to listen this far into the podcast, like, we are not film scholars, just to make that abundantly clear.
No.
Two lay women who are just like, the movie talked a lot and I liked that.
You know, I forgot to do this, but I was thinking we should preface the whole discussion with, listen, we just like this shit. We studied like film, obviously school wise, but like we're not filmmakers.
No, we're not critics. We really should have said that at the top. Is like, we both work in production, and we work very heavily in an audio medium for a long time, and now we're just kind of working in an audio medium on the side and you know, being our own Wallaces and My film history goes as far as, you know, my degree in college, and that's kind of where it stopped.
Maybe our life experiences bring a different, you know, aspect to this as far as commentary, and
hopefully
I just imagine
like a film historian like on the other end of this yelling at me like, dialogue heavy, like talk movies that talk a lot. Kevin Smith versus on the golf, come on.
You know what I say to them? Settle the fuck down, Andre. That's gonna be my new thing. Hey, stop being an Andre right now.
This is a free ass podcast, like, let's just slow down, all right?
Oh man. How do we get back into this? We've derailed a little bit.
We can't. Okay. Nope. You know what? Are you familiar with trauma films? Like Tromaville? No. And did you ever watch the Toxic Avenger?
No.
Are you familiar with? All right. I only asked because at the end of the film, and this is such a stupid little thing, but like I left it rolling because I loved getting to see the New York city streets in 1981. And like, I such a little thing on such a heavy movie, but I loved watching that at the beginning and the end. But there's a credit for Trauma Inc. and they did additional production services and it shook me because Trauma, I don't know if it's the same Trauma. Trauma is this D-list schlock film company that I love. I've got a bumper sticker for them on my car now. And Andrew Lloyd Kaufman, you know, very weird, bizarre, lovely man who heralds safety over anything else. Like you watch an interview with him. He's like, we're making just garbage cinema. Like safety comes first, like nothing. You know, he's just very cool dude. And I saw Trauma and I was like, Trauma involved with my dinner with Audrey? What?
Don't pigeonhole them. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm getting a little riled up. This is all this back and forth. This is a lot.
I know, right? I haven't done this since film school, probably, or since I got film school very loosely. I'll put it in quotes. Did you have any final thoughts or any additional?
I have so much shit.
You took more notes than I did. Damn.
I just want to reference the fact that they meant that Andre drops Nazi language, I think, 6 different times. And I was like, whoa. This man is, every time he said something, I was like, I would note down Nazi reference. Nazi reference, oh my Hitler, God. Hitler reference. I was like, okay, that's a lot. You know, it was just an interesting thing to me.
He is an older man. Let's see, 1981. He looks like he's probably like let's be real. He looks like he's like in his early 50s to me. He probably wouldn't have been old enough to serve, or he would. Yes, yes.
Not sure.
He would have been pretty young if he served.
I think also people looked older in the 70s, early 80s.
They were road hard, put away at Studio 54 type, especially in New York. Wasn't pollution like 10 times worse in New York in the 70s too?
I mean, this is a great example of how terrible New York was in the 70s. I mean, the subway looks like trash. Like every time I see pictures from the 70s and early 80s of New York City and the subway specifically, I'm like, how were people just sitting on, like, we're just driving, like going to work like this? And we complain about it now. It's still trash, but like at least the graffiti is cleaned up. Unfortunately, we have to thank Giuliani for that. Sorry. Let's not go there.
That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah. Like you were saying about the whole watching the credits and watching the like the views of New York and just that moment, I did enjoy him, you know, like looking around and talking about, oh, I had a, you know, ice cream cone here and I went to this dude's store with my dad. I love stuff like that. That's stuff I do when I'm just in back, either back home or, you know, driving through New York or walking through New York. So I appreciated that. It was fun to kind of get that moment of experience and kind of highlighting the city.
I think it also, it wraps up his experience with Andre a little bit too, where he's just kind of like ruminating on the night very, very lightly. And you know, the things that they've talked about and just like admiring the city and this maybe new eyes, maybe fresh eyes, you know, opening up his world just a little bit more.
Just a little bit. Yeah. And seeing things that he may have taken for granted or, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, the day in and day out, especially when you grow up in New York City, you kind of become blind to it. So
yeah,
I appreciated that. That was a nice little soothing ending.
Yeah, and it buttons it up the same way that it starts, you know, with that his journey, you know, from the subway to the taxi cab is really interesting.
And even the fact that he treated himself to a cab, I was like,
yeah,
I could tell his mentality had been shifted, because I feel like if this was just a normal dinner, he would have just been like, all right, I gotta get back on the subway and struggle on the way home. And he's like, you know what, I'm gonna do something nice for myself. A cab home, you know.
He didn't have to pay for dinner after all. I mean, why not?
I mean, shoot. That's a plus. Speaking of the dinner, another moment I did enjoy was how, and I didn't realize it as it was happening. It wasn't until we get that reveal at the end, but how the shots were getting tighter and tighter towards the end of the conversation. And I was just in it, you know, I was like, oh, we can't see that funny bartender in the back anymore. and we're just getting tighter and tighter. And then when you reveal that everyone is gone and the waiters are basically cleaning up, I was like, wow, I love that effect, because it really does make you, because I've had moments where I'm talking to someone or doing something where I'm kind of blind to the world around me and so hyper-focused that when I look around, it's like, oh, so much has changed.
Exactly. You know? You're so drawn in that like you end up wearing those blinders, and you see it in the reflection too, because you see a couple people in the beginning on the wider in the reflection, because you're far enough away.
Yeah.
And then you just end up seeing Andre at the end.
I thought that was really well done, and it had a great effect.
Yeah. The camera technique on that it's just drawing you in. And such a simple thing throughout the movie. I love that.
Yeah. That was a high moment for me. I have a lot of stuff about the judgy waiter.
Always back to the judgy waiter. Best character of the three.
So good.
I want to know more about what happened to that man. Like, what is his story?
What does he feel?
I want to think that the waiter also had opinions and he just didn't feel, you know, comfortable expressing them.
Told him not to.
Exactly. Maybe this waiter has an even more expanded upon, you know, perspective of all of this.
Right. I you know, he might. I think in the beginning he was judging Wallace. I think this waiter is very much the typical old school service type of person who, you know, he's trained to just do the best to serve these people at this status. And like, he gets pride in that. So when someone like Wallace comes in, who's like this bumbling idiot who doesn't even know what the word for potato soup in a different language is, you know, he's like, you fucking peasant, why are you here? And then I think it does shift a little at the end when Andre begins to go off, and then the waiter comes in and checks in. He's like, is everything all right? Is the matrix been compromised?
He goes from judging just Wallace to judging Wallace
and Andre.
He's like, I am too fucking old for this shit.
He's like, I gotta go home. And like, I don't know. He's like not here for it. And
he's got a cat to feed. Leave them. Let the man go home.
He's definitely got a cat to feed. You're so right. Oh man, that's so true. Oh, I love that waiter. Also, I enjoy that Statler and Waldorf were in attendance in the restaurant in one of the establishment shots.
Yes, they were like having their own commentating. Comment. Blah, blah, blah. I can't talk. I'm spent.
Oh, sorry.
No. I'm just kidding. You're good.
I think that's. I'm trying to see if there's anything else.
Three out of five.
Three life searching journeys out of five, I will say, is my final rating. What about you?
I'm probably the same. I want to watch it again. Like it's this conversation has left me wanting to watch it again.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
but I get three and a half. It is interesting, and it was different than anything I'd seen, especially lately.
Right, especially for the time that it came out, I'm sure it was a big deal. And funny, what I thought about at the end, I was like, this film is exactly one of the things that it is a film that takes you out of life. It takes you away from the norm, because normal films, it's like you have different shots and you have different characters coming in, you have all these. But this is a very simple, straightforward thing. And I felt like it was an example of taking a break from the norm and enjoying something different.
It's very stripped down. Very kind of, not, I don't want to say slice of life, but like, you know, very true to life and in watching somebody else's conversation like that.
I think the last thing I want to do is, what do we think happened to Wallace and Andre?
Oh, okay. Oh dear. Okay. I think that Wallace goes home and his wife is there. Mm-hmm. And she, doesn't he say that he, yeah, he goes home and he tells her all about his dinner with Andre. That's mm-hmm. one of the final lines. Mm-hmm. I think he does that. And I think his wife doesn't like Andre. Like she's mm-hmm. probably way more, she's probably even more pragmatic than Wallace is. And she's heard yeah. about, you know, how Andre basically abandoned his wife and child to go off and, you know, flit around Europe. And she doesn't approve of him. And so she probably doesn't take the same stock in this particular conversation, having not been there. But I think Wallace probably goes through life a little bit changed. There's a part of me that wants to be like, oh, he writes the next great American play. And, you know, he's able to take more, you know, trips and shit. But I think it changes him just a little, because I think that's more true to reality and true to life is mm-hmm. he probably goes through life appreciating things a little bit more and looking at them with a little, you know, shifted view. I think maybe he does write a successful play, but he doesn't go out and eat sand, you know, to celebrate. He gets to take, you know, a week long trip with his wife. And right. you know, he just has a more beautiful outlook, just a little bit.
I agree.
I think Andre ends up getting a divorce and goes through whatever Don Draper did throughout Mad Men, where like he has a drinking problem and he probably sleeps around and he like tries to reconnect with the weird friends that tried to bury him in a grave. And, you know, two of them are dead. And one of them is, you know, now part of the early 80s cult scene. He's opened up his own cult. Maybe Andre opens up his own cult. That might be where I'm erring towards.
Is he charismatic enough, though?
He's charismatic. I mean, look at Jim Jones. You just have to give people enough drugs and be loud enough.
You know what? He did have that woman who wrote him that long letter, and then all he sent her back was a fucking kid's rendition of a turkey with a heart. And I was like, really? This is
okay. Hand turkey. Right. Very Svengali. Like, your heart is in my hand. Fuck you.
You're right. He might be able to segue into some cult leadership.
He either gets a little culty or he ends up down on his luck a little bit. I think he does get divorced. I don't think Conchita puts up with that shit too much longer. And I think he ends up being a single dad for a while and kind of bums around and then eventually ends up in AA. I don't know. Andre's trajectory does not seem like he is a man searching, even at the end of the dinner to me, even though he's got a lot of conviction in the things that he says. He's not grounded. He's not grounded in reality. He's not grounded in a sense of where he stands right now. So I don't know. Andre's future is a little more hazy to me. What do you think?
Bleak. I agree with you about Wallace. I do think he starts to sprinkle in things little by little and is a little more open to looking at the world differently and a little more open to not sticking to his routine. I did like the part where he was talking about how he's just afraid if he deviates from this path that he's, you know, what the consequences are. I do think he's going to try to open up a little bit more, and who knows, it might lead to him doing something great, but I agree with you. I think it's going to be small baby steps and it'll just make his life a little bit better.
The normal man.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And he's probably going to stay with Debbie. She's going to have to cook him all these meals, even though she's
poor Debbie. Poor fucking Debbie.
Andre, I'm a little bit, I don't think it's going to go well. I think Andre has a lot of sadness in him and he's searching for something. I'm not sure if Conchita's going to leave him. I think she might be a ride or die and she might just be living. She might just be living her own life, full life without the consequences of having Andre around yet still benefiting possibly from his money. So I don't know.
But then the 90s roll around and.
Yeah. 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 It also depends on how much money this man has and how much he's squandering it with these trips. And
just gonna say,
yeah,
where the fuck is this money coming from?
I think
he's Wallace, a director, but
yeah, no, Wallace says there's like a throwaway line in the beginning that he says that he's like he has a little money stashed from somewhere that comes from somewhere, but no one knows where it's from, kind of a thing. So
Yeah, that seems like that's easily lost, maybe.
Right, especially with these trips that he's funding, you know? Yeah. And it's like...
And still taking care of his wife and kids.
Right, so I'm afraid the kids are going to end up resenting him, especially if there's no money left over for them. And I think he's also going to try to be like, once they get up, become adults, he might, I see him trying to like invite himself along on things with them and like trying to be part of the cool crowd of them. And then just being like, either one might embrace it and one might be like, I hate you, dad, get away from me. But yeah, I do think it doesn't end great for him. I think he's going to be unfortunately sad to the end, because I think he's constantly searching outwards. I think he does do some internal work, but he's constantly searching outwards. And it's, I mean, 70s, man, from the idyllic 60s into the 70s is a hard time. People are, you know, they were so comfy and things got really quick.
So. And especially with the materialism that will increase and expound in the 80s, because this is only 81 that this movie was filmed, so probably, or it came out in 81, so probably filmed like 79 80. The yuppie stuff and the materialism and the technology boom that comes with the 80s, like, that's going to be a hard slap in the face for Andre. It's a very rapid, it'll be a rapidly shifting perspective and worldview and goals. So yeah, I think that's also going to hit him pretty hard, because you're right. Yeah. He's looking externally. He's not looking internally.
Yeah.
Or not as much.
Yeah. He does a little bit. I'm not going to discredit him. No. Also, he's ultimately, they're both, everyone is worried about death. And Andre is like worried about death in the sense that I need to find meaning in what this life is. And Wallace is worried about death, and I need to do everything I can to be happy in this moment and, you know, make this successful life. So I think Andre is going to be worried about death to the end, and he's never going to really accept happiness.
Yeah,
that seems bleak, but you know,
he's always going to be looking for something more. I mean, he said it himself. He's learning to be human.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't feel like you're human, you don't have all of the emotions that come with being human, including happiness. I think that makes sense.
Or, to your first theory, he's gonna kill someone and then he will find happiness.
Yeah. You know? Or he'll kill himself. God, this is ending on a very low note. We're like, he's gonna kill someone, or like maybe he'll end up killing himself. I don't know. Andre's pretty bleak.
Andre.
I think it's interesting that for all of this theory and rhetoric and imaginings that Andre talks about in this dinner, that at the end we're still like, he doesn't seem happy. Like, I don't see things necessarily working out for him.
No. And listen, if Andre was having a hard time, then I can't even imagine him living in a world of social media. I have to say and I have to say one last thing. I'm sorry, but
no, that's, don't be sorry.
In his argument about the fact that we can't change people's opinions, we can't change people's worldview, everything, blah, blah, blah. He was talking as if, and I understand it was the 70s, you know, war had just happened. There's a lot of terrible things happening, a lot of men and women suffering. I think he is so, it's this also part of his delusions of grandeur. He is so stuck in this idea of his world, his time. His time being the worst. This is the worst. Society's trash. It's never going to get better. It's going to be garbage forever. Blah. And it's like, dude, this shit has been happening forever. It's cyclical. Like, shit gets okay. Shit gets garbage. Shit gets terrible. Things get a little bit better. Then it gets garbage again. This is just the way life is. And you know, things do get a little bit worse in certain cases in the future. But there is hope in the future. There is hope in general. And I just... there is hope. That's how I want to end it.
Oh, I like that. That's a good way to end it.
Especially now. There is hope, guys, you know?
There's hope.